from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In little more than a week, the Sunni militants of ISIS and their allies have rampaged across Iraq, taking city after city, bearing down on a major oil refinery, threatening Baghdad, utterly upending the picture of a settled nation Americans wanted to see after U.S. withdrawal. This hour on Point, what should the U.S. do now? Something? Anything? Nothing? In Iraq. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is it time for boots back on the ground, for airstrikes, for nothing? Time to stay out. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear a big range of views in this hour, but joining us first from Washington, Josh Letterman, White House reporter for the Associated Press. Josh, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
So what did the president tell congressional leaders yesterday about how the White House is looking at what ought to be done?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We had four congressional leaders at the White House yesterday and four different descriptions of what happened in that meeting. Not a lot of unanimity, but we do know that the president discussed with these congressional leaders at least some options that they all agreed would not necessarily require the president to go to Congress for a vote. Whether that means more limited types of actions that the U.S. could take or what exactly they're considering is not totally clear, although we do know that the president has ruled out putting American combat troops back onto the ground in Iraq.
I mean, presidents have done very, very large things without going to Congress, so I don't know what that tells us exactly. What do you know of what steps, what practical steps, if any, the White House is seriously considering?
Well, one thing that we do know, particularly a new development overnight and this morning, is that the administration is trying to decide whether to start pushing the Shiite Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, to step down or to ease his way out of power. The thinking basically being that there are certain things that the U.S. could do militarily, but that in the absence of some type of a political solution to the failed leadership of al-Maliki in bringing in the Sunnis and the Kurds into the government and making them feel included, that, you know, military action is not really going to be that effective. So we know the president is going to be discussing options with his national security team today and probably trying to decide how publicly or privately to start edging al-Maliki towards the exit.
As we speak, I mean, who knows if he'll go or not. As we speak, there are reports coming across the wires of black flags, banners flying from the watchtowers of Iraq's largest oil refinery. While the White House thinks about this, things are happening in Iraq. How many refineries have to go before they say, maybe we do have to do something? Or what if the ISIS goes into Baghdad? Is there a red line anywhere here, Josh?
Well, that's a good question. I think most people in the U.S. are still believing that it's probably unlikely that Baghdad itself will fall. It's a very heavily fortified city and also a multi-ethnic city. But certainly we're seeing a lot of developments getting closer and closer to Baghdad, where these insurgents are able to wrest control of some areas. That particular refinery that you mentioned, both Iraqi officials and some of the militants are still saying that the government technically is still in control. But we did see those Sunni militants, you know, hanging their black banners on above the refinery, certainly a very ominous sign for the United States as they're trying to decide what to do about this.
Is there a timetable, or is it simply that as long as we're doing nothing, and that's the plan?
There's not a hard and fast timetable. Basically, what we've been hearing is sooner than later. Obviously, this is a critical situation and not a lot of wiggle room. But there's some thinking that after initial gains by the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, which is this al-Qaeda-inspired group that's operating there, that the insurgency has slowed a little bit, and that as the Iraqi government has launched its counterinsurgency, has been able to blunt a little bit of that momentum, perhaps giving the U.S. and other nations a little bit more time to figure out their next move.
U.S. drones, are they over Iraq now? Are they sharing intelligence with the Maliki government?
We don't have a ton of detail, obviously, about what kind of intelligence activities the U.S. is conducting, but we know that the United States has been considering increasing the amount of intelligence sharing with the Iraqi government, particularly as both the U.S. and Iraq try and identify what some potential targets could be, because even if we do decide that we're willing to send drones or aircraft in to launch airstrikes, you have to have viable clear targets on the ground that you think could actually make a difference in stopping this. And U.S. intelligence agencies have had some difficulty establishing some of those targets due to lack of the kind of intelligence that we might have in other places where we have, you know, more drones flying over and a little bit more information.
And targets that would bring more good than blowback. Josh Lederman at the White House for the Associated Press. Josh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
A big range of views on what should happen here. John McCain yesterday, Arizona senator, saying, hey, something has to happen. Rome is burning.
It's time to come up with a course of action. It's Rome is burning here. And 500,000 people, the city of Mosul, are now refugees? 500,000?
Rome is burning, says John McCain. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid spoke out on Tuesday against military force, U.S., in Iraq.
We shouldn't be sending our men and women back to Iraq. Those who attacked President Obama for bringing our troops home are flat wrong and criticizing him for that. And they're out of step not only with the president, but the American people. After a decade of war, we've all had enough.
What will the U.S. do? Not clear. Here's White House Press Secretary Jay Carney.
The president has ruled out only sending U.S. troops back into combat in Iraq. Ultimately, the solution that is needed is an Iraqi one, and any U.S. action, including any possible military action, would be in support of a strategy to build the capacity of the Iraqis to effectively and sustainably counter the threat posed by extremists.
Didn't happen in a decade. Might happen now. We've got a big range of views with us today. Joining me now in the studio is Barry Posen, MIT professor of political science. He was strongly against the U.S. intervention in Iraq. His most recent Politico magazine piece headlined "The Case for Doing Nothing in Iraq." Barry Posen, welcome back to On Point.
It's good to be here, Tom, but not under these circumstances.
With us from New York, Max Boot, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a staunch supporter of the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, has argued for a continued military presence beyond the 2011 troop withdrawal, has argued recently for direct military U.S. military involvement as the crisis has escalated. Max Boot, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me back.
And with us from Washington, Denise Natali, Minerva Fellow at the Center for Strategic Research in the Institute for National Strategic Studies at the National Defense University, an expert on Middle Eastern and Kurdish affairs. She's called for concentrated U.S. diplomatic engagement across the region. Denise Natali, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here again.
Barry Posen, we're going to look at the whole range. First to you. You say do nothing. Nothing, no matter what, no matter what happens here. Oil refinery may be coming down today, one of the three or four big ones in Iraq. I mean, even if they go into Baghdad, nothing, just nothing?
Well, as I argue in my new book, Restraint, a new foundation for U.S. grand strategy, the United States in situations like this always has to consider its strategic interests from a zero base. There's a lot of emotions involved in thinking now because of the vast costs the United States paid in Iraq.
Trillions spent, right, 4,500 right, dead,
but,
so many
but
wounded.
As economists and strategists will usually tell you, sunk costs are exactly that, sunk. That's not a reason. We have to think about what our interests are today and the strategies we might choose to pursue those interests. Now, the trend in Iraq is towards partition. And for many, many years, observers of the Iraqi situation either predicted this or advised this. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with a partitioned Iraqi state that really challenges an important American vital interest. That's the first thing, right? It's not going to be a nuclear weapon state. It's not going to be a great power. It's not going to be a great economy. And this argument that it's going to be an easy and convenient base for a giant terrorist enterprise is challengeable on many fronts. There's no doubt that ISIS is bad, are a bunch of bad guys. – But But we know that these guys inevitably alienate the people that they're, you know, that they pretend to eliminate. This state is not going to be stable. It doesn't have airports. It doesn't have seaports. It doesn't have much of an economy.
It's going to be surrounded by enemies.
Look, they may or may not talk about threatening other places. They may or may not even try. But this is not 2001. The United States has spent years hardening itself up against these kinds of attacks. We have tactics that we use. We have $70 billion we spend on intelligence, at least $15 billion we spend on special operations every single year. If we can't contain, watch, defend against this little bandit state, if it emerges at all, fissiparous bandit state, then we don't have an Iraq problem. We have a United States defense policy problem.
Barry Posen says, do nothing. Stay out. Max Boot, you say get in there. Get in there in a pretty substantial way. What's your recipe, Max?
Well, I think we should be combining military with political action. I think we need to get special operations forces and military trainers back on the ground so they can call an airstrike, so they can bolster the professionalism of the Iraqi military, which has sadly declined since the ill-advised pullout of U.S. forces in 2011. At the same time, I think we need to use the kind of military aid that we could provide to Iraq right now to stop the onslaught of ISIS. We need to use that military aid as a political cudgel to try to get a better government in Baghdad that will reach out to the Sunnis instead of alienating them. And whether that's going to be led by Prime Minister Maliki or not, I don't know. But my opinion is Iraq probably needs a new leader, and we need to use what leverage we can to bring that about.
So you say boots on the ground, special forces, predators, intelligence, advisors, arms to factions in Syria that might go up against ISIS, that's a lot.
Well, it is. It's a bare minimum, I think, because I am not as sanguine as Barry Posen is about allowing this terrorist state to develop in the middle of the Middle East. I mean, right now, what's happening is incredibly alarming. ISIS has control of a region stretching roughly from Aleppo in northern Syria to Mosul in northern Iraq and encompassing most of the Sunni areas of Iraq. They've already grabbed millions of dollars, arms, the major oil refinery in Iraq. This is a disaster. Already, U.S. intelligence has warned that the area of Syria controlled by jihadists like ISIS is the biggest danger to American security.
Max Boot, stand by. We're up against the clock here. It is alarming, but what should we do? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S., Iraq, and what to do now. Something, anything, nothing in Iraq. Video there out of from the Daily Mail out of Iraq yesterday, fighting all over that country. With us this hour, Barry Posen, author of the new book, Restraint. He says, do nothing. Do not get back into this. Professor of political science at MIT. Max Boot is with us, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, author of The Savage Wars of Peace and more. He says, do quite a lot. Joins us from New York. With us from Washington, Denise Natale at the National Defense University. Lots of calls for Nouri al-Maliki to be somehow out of there. Here was Democrat Dianne Feinstein, California senator, and Wednesday at a hearing.
I think that most of us that have followed this are really convinced that the Maliki government, candidly, has got to go if you want any reconciliation. If you want a Shia-Sunni war, that's where we're going. If you want partition, that's where we're going right now.
The U.S. military hardly seems to be chomping at the bit. Here's U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, telling senators on Wednesday there's a high standard required now for U.S. military action.
Anytime we use U.S. military force, we use it for those things that are in our national interests and that once I'm assured we can use it responsibly and effectively. And so, as we've been working to provide options to the president, that's the standard.
Barry Posen, Max Boot, please stand by. Denise Natale, how do you see it? Can we do nothing? Should we be in there heavy, as Max Boot suggests? Is there something in between? How do you look at what's unfolding here, Denise?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm extremely as pessimistic as Max is. However, there are some reservations at this point, and we have lessons identified from Iraq 1, from Syria, of doing too much and doing nothing, to use those as examples to say, well, we just have to now get back in again and clean up the mess. One of the problems, and I don't see at any point point that we should put boots on the ground. We have to ask, will a military intervention bring about the desired change that we are seeking, or will it actually exacerbate the problem? Now, there is discussion of some type of military strike. Again, the nature of ISIS, where it is embedded in Mosul right now, at this moment, it is actually embedded with the people, with average Sunni populations. So until we can identify or split those populations, we run the risk again of really exacerbating and bringing on Sunni Arab, I want to even say more than anger, not only against the United States, but even a greater sectarian war. With that said, no boots on the ground, no nation building, some type of stabilization and security is necessary. We do have a United States Strategic Framework Agreement with Iraq, which is to assure cooperation in all of these areas, energy sector, sovereignty, security, and defense. So, you know, what we saw in Syria by doing nothing, I mean, absolutely nothing, got us to where we are now. And I don't know, with our interest in Iraq, some of them being important energy assets, we want to see what happened in Syria to emerge in Iraq. Diplomatic engagement, we hesitated too long in Syria with even some of the more unsavory neighbors. This is at a high level, regional anti-terrorist cooperation, Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, UAE, many of our regional Arab and Persian and Turkish neighbors or allies to be involved in this as well, because everyone has got their hands in it.
So you would work the diplomacy. Let me ask you, Iraq has asked for U.S. air support. They've asked for airstrikes to beat back the militants. Would you do that?
Not until at this moment. I agree with the president and our Department of Defense and the Pentagon. At this moment, I don't think that we have the intelligence, and where ISIS is embedded, I think that this could be a dangerous engagement at this moment. If we can isolate these populations, you know, target ISIS in areas of strategic interest, at some moment, I wouldn't disregard it. But at this time, I think more surveillance and intelligence is needed. Again, ISIS is too deeply ingrained and embedded in the population, and they actually have support right now.
So hit ISIS and you hit the population, potentially turn them against them in Baghdad and others. Max Boot, David Petraeus, General Petraeus, who was there for the American surge, got a lot of credit for that in London yesterday, saying, be careful, even just going with airstrikes. He said, this cannot be the United States being the air force of Shia militias. Maliki has played his government for the Shias against the Sunni and the Kurds. How do you possibly go in there without just taking sides in a religious war, Max?
Well, General Petraeus is absolutely right, and we would be making a big mistake if we just called in airstrikes right now on the say-so of Maliki and the Iraqi security forces, which have become sectarian and politicized. I mean, Denise Naftali was talking about how hard it is to identify targets and how we need to have better intelligence on the ground. I completely agree. I imagine General Petraeus does as well. But how do you get that intelligence? There's only one way to do it, which is to put some American eyes on the ground, some special operators, some intelligence operatives, some trainers in the higher-level military headquarters, so we get some situational awareness of what's actually going on. And I disagree with your characterization of that position, Tom, as going in heavy. I'm not advocating an American invasion of Iraq. I'm not advocating sending in hundreds of thousands of troops.
How do you avoid it? But if you go in,
the presence of special operations forces of the kind that we had, for example, in Afghanistan in the fall of 2001, which made the airstrikes and the cooperation with the Northern Alliance so effective.
Yeah, but this isn't toppling a sitting Taliban government. This is dealing with an insurgency that's fast on its feet, that has a fair amount of support on the ground. How do you get in there in Syria, in Iraq, intelligence and special forces and drone strikes and airstrikes, and not be in the middle of this conflict?
Well, we are in the middle of this conflict, and we have a major stake in it, because if we don't do something, Iraq is going to be divided between an al-Qaeda state on the one hand and an Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps state on the other, with Shiite sectarians and Sunni sectarians dividing up the country between them. That's a disaster for American interests. It's a disaster for American allies in the region. You can just imagine what that will portend for the price of oil and how it will threaten Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Jordan, and other neighboring states. We need to do something. And I think we can act in a fairly, in a reasonable, fairly low-key way without a huge amount of risk, with fairly limited numbers of Americans on the ground. But we need to do, we do need to have some special operators as we also pursue the political option and the diplomatic option. But having some skin in the game and making more of a military effort also will vastly enhance our political leverage.
Max Boot, you know how much skepticism there is about that in this country right now. Some of it sitting with me right here. Do something, Barry Posen. You say no. You say do nothing. But let me ask you. You hear Denise say, look at Syria. We essentially did nothing there, and that's not looking so great. We've got one refinery maybe down already, maybe more to come. If the oil infrastructure of Iraq goes down in a civil war or a Islamic caliphate, how does that look? What if the Sunni militants even take Baghdad? I mean, is there some – what about the knock-on effects in the region? Can we really just sit back and let this burn?
There are so many issues here. Just because one feels concerned about a situation doesn't mean that we have answers, that we have reliable strategies, that we have reliable allies.
But when my house is on fire, I get the hose out and I turn the water on.
When your house is on fire, right? When someone else's house is on fire, and it's on fire because the family members are throwing Molotov cocktails at each other, right? Are you going to go in and try and separate the Molotov cocktail-throwing lunatics who are burning the house down? Particularly when you've tested that hypothesis before, right? At some point, you have to say that the hypothesis the United States can stage manage politics in Iraq has been well and truly tested. Now, after $1 trillion of spending, years of American military presence, 4,500 American military dead, 10 times that known wounded, many tens of thousands of more with wounds that we do not know about or psychological damage, tens of thousands of Iraqis' deaths occasioned by our presence, at some point we have to say the experiment has been well and truly run and it has failed. Now, what I think we have to notice in Iraq, what we have to observe in Iraq is that unfortunately, when people fight well and fight hard on their own, they're fighting for their group. They're not fighting for the American dream image of a multi-ethnic, pluralist, liberal, civic nationalist democracy.
Okay, we get that.
They're
so,
fighting for their group.
But let me,
if Max wants to find someone to assist in Iraq who can benefit from the tender administrations of our special operations forces and our air forces, it's going to be a Shiite-dominated Iraqi military unit. Otherwise, they're wandering around haplessly in Baghdad looking for friends.
But let me
These are the choices.
But let me test your vision. So you say even if a caliphate should be established here, a partition, okay, you say that there will be forces that push against that. But as I understand it, Barry, in the piece I read of yours, you're saying treat it kind of like Yemen. And okay, so they establish some foothold there. If it gets out of control, if terrorists move in, hit them with drones from the sky, hit them pinpoint Yemen style, not Afghanistan style, not Iraq war style. But how far could the unraveling go before you'd say, oh, I don't know, this is not working?
Well, you have to make some sort of educated guess, which the military would call, or the intelligence people would call a strategic assessment of what the trends are in Iraq. And I think you heard from the report this morning that, you know, there seems to be a consensus view that the resistance of the Baghdad regime is going to stiffen around Baghdad. And it's going to stiffen for obvious reasons. The military units are more homogeneous. They're Shiite.
I mean, I'm sure
they put all their elite units
there.
It's a majority Shiite population in Baghdad. It's full of militia veterans who viciously fought the Sunni Arabs for years.
So you think it's self-staunching at some point?
I believe that the idea that all the dominoes are going to fall and you're going to have a caliphate that extends down to Basra and is going
to
control oil.
This is the 11th coming of domino theory. But what if they've just got a great big oil source? I mean, they're already tapping oil in Syria. They become rich on that. We hear that ISIS has $2 billion now. What if they get Iraqi oil flowing into their coffers? Is that still all right?
If they're making money from selling oil, it seems to me they're selling it to someone with money. Now, many people seem to believe that we are so strong that we can isolate the Iranian government from its ability to make money in the oil business. We can isolate the Iranians from their ability to import. Now, you're telling me that the country that thinks it can do this, that has done this, that thinks it can coerce the Iranians into giving up a strong national objective, can't deal with a little ISIS run. And by the way, as many have suggested, including Jay Garner this morning, these ISIS guys, who are not the only people who are making this rebellion happen, inevitably fall out with their Sunni Arab allies. If we're patient and wait, this thing is going to turn.
On its own weight. Max, Denise, I'll come to you. Let me get a call or two. Joe in Marfa, Texas. Joe, you're on the air.
Okay, everybody, calm down. Listen, Posner's got it right, but for the wrong reasons. This is a religious war between Shias and Sunnis. Forget the borders that were put together by Churchill after World War I to keep these people fighting because they backed the Germans. What we want there is oil. Well, we're missing the most important opportunity we've had. Russia has cut off the oil. These people are not going to let us have oil. Go establish the ports with our gas. But the war is never going to end. This is about succession from Mohammed from the year of 700.
So you're saying you're in the do-nothing camp, Joe.
We're going to fight forever. Get out of there.
Joe, let me hold that thought one more. In Ann Arbor, Michigan, John, you're on the air, John.
Tom, thank you for taking my comment. Mm-hmm. In 1989, when the Soviets left, we walked away from Afghanistan with disastrous consequences. Since the beginning of the Syrian uprising, we've been consistently walking away with terrible results. Nothing in Max Brook suggests will do any good unless intelligent liberals, not an oxymoron, speak out about the most incompetent foreign policy presidency since the end of World War II. Without a new professional foreign policy team and a dramatic response now in both Syria and Iraq, the situation we face in the next administration will be worse than a Dunkirk or a Saigon.
John, we saw Afghanistan in 89. We saw what came after that. On the other hand, look, we went in heavy to Iraq. We had a big war there. People said it was all on the wrong premises, and it may itself have created the circumstances that have put us in this situation now. So I don't know about history and who's got the worst record here, but you want to go in militarily in spite of there's at least two administrations quite imperfect in a row, John.
Can I? That is correct, and we really have to look at that situation. But what choice do we have now? If ISIS establishes a functional state there, I believe that we will be at more danger even in our own homeland than we were after our abandonment of Afghanistan.
John, let me take that to Denise Natale. Denise, could we manage a Sunni state in northwest Iraq with some ISIS influence, maybe even control, with intelligence and pinpoint drone strikes and Yemen style?
You know, I think it was Max or made the point. Or at this point, we all know that, you know, attacking or bombing the ISIS would aggravate the Sunni population. But as what we saw in Syria, there's going to be a point where the Sunni Baathists and the secular Sunni Arabs and the tribal, that, you know, they're going to split and turn against ISIS as well. So, you know, it is not a dichotomy of do nothing or do everything. Wait till we get them on our side. Okay, and again, we do not want to see a radicalized Sunni area. Do we have a Sunni state or statelet? You know, if we could have three regions within a federal Iraq that function, that would be ideal. But I want to go back to the point where somebody said it failed. You know, yes, our experiment in regime change failed. Our experiment in democratization failed. But this is not about regime change. And I would be very careful about just saying get rid of Maliki. Nobody likes him. But he did get 750,000 votes, and that would have the same repercussions on the Shia. We start going into countries and redesigning their political system based on who we like and who we don't. Let them figure it out. But in terms of potential strikes, we should not keep that off as a possibility until we have Sunni Arab support on our side. So it seems that it's coming from them and from their request.
Max, half a minute before the break, and I'll come to you more, Max, but how about that? Let this go, and Iraq's Sunni tribal chiefs will turn on ISIS themselves. We don't have to do that. There's a self-limiting element here, Max. What about it?
That's wishful thinking. The reason why there was an Anbar awakening in 2007 was because the U.S. was there to support the tribes against ISIS. There were attempts by the tribes to rise up against ISIS, or AQI as it was then known, and they were put down with extreme violence. That's going to happen again unless there's somebody out there who can help the tribes resist ISIS, and there's really nobody other than the U.S. who can play that role, along with the professional elements of the Iraqi security forces.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the U.S., Iraq, and what to do now. Something, anything, nothing. Something, what? Barry Posen is with us from MIT. His new book is Restraint, and he's talking it today. Do nothing, he says. Max Boot says, do a fair amount more than that. Senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, author of The Savage Wars of Peace, contributing editor of The Weekly Standard, The Los Angeles Times, joins us from New York. Denise Natale is with us from Washington and the National Defense University. Maybe there's a middle path in her view. Let's go to our listeners. Dave in Wanakee, Wisconsin. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think that because Obama is taking so much heat for a decision that was made by right-wing conservatives to go into Iraq, that he should force them to reauthorize so they actually put some skin in the game themselves by putting them up for a vote after they have voted to authorize war in Iraq.
And if it was voted for, is that a good idea? Do you think we should go back in, Dave?
No, I do not. I want them to be placed up for a vote in advance. That was one option we never had, was to vote for those people who authorized us to go into Iraq.
Dave, I appreciate your call. One more right here. Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
If people want to go into Iraq, they ought to send their kids first. They are the ones who should be sending their kids instead of the rest of us. We can't even take care of our veterans now in the hospitals. Everyone knew that this would happen because they want our billions of dollars that we spend over there, reconstructing. And every time we pull out, this will happen over and over again. This is caused by the belief systems that they create. That's where all this hate comes from. And we just got to let it play itself out until they realize that they're the cause of the problems and stay out of there.
That could take 1,000 years, but maybe it's their 1,000 years. Max Boot, Barry Posen says, look, we already went in for 8 or 9 years. We spent a lot of blood and treasure. The experiment has been run, and it didn't. We didn't bring a beautiful democracy to Iraq with security and stability. We've already run the experiment. Let's not pretend otherwise. Let's not get it back in here, Max.
I was as critical as anybody of the mistakes that the Bush administration made in Iraq from 2003 to 2007. I called for Don Rumsfeld to be fired in 2004. There is no question the Bush administration screwed up a lot of things in Iraq. But then it got one big thing right, the surge, which led to a 90% decline in violence. And by 2011, Iraq was actually pretty stable. After the U.S. troops pulled out, Vice President Biden was even bragging that Iraq was going to be a signal achievement of the Obama administration. It was not an unmitigated disaster. It was actually pretty stable. The reason it's gone to hell in a handbasket is because we, in fact, pulled all of our troops out at a time when we were taking pretty much no casualties, but the troops were still a vital stabilizing factor, which I and a lot of other people predicted would lead to disaster.
Iraq didn't want them. They wouldn't make a deal with us to leave them there.
It's more complicated. If you actually read the definitive account of what happened by Michael Gordon and Bernard Traynor in The Endgame, mm-hmm. a book about the war in Iraq, what they show is that President Obama wasn't very eager to negotiate that accord, and he didn't really have his heart into it, and he pulled the plug at the first possible opportunity. But it doesn't really matter who's to blame, whether it's Bush or Obama. I'm willing to stipulate there's plenty of blame to go around. The issue is, what do we do now? And burying our head in the sand is not a responsible strategy, because if we do that, Iraq will become as much of a disaster as Syria, and will continue to destabilize the rest of the region, will become a humanitarian disaster, and will also become a strategic disaster, because it will be a breeding ground for terrorism.
Max, we were talking yesterday with my old friend Tom Ricks. You know him well. He wrote the big book Fiasco. And Tom was saying, thank God we didn't leave 10,000 U.S. troops there, because they would now be in the middle of a civil war, religious war, call it what you like. They wouldn't be able to solve it, but we'd be in the middle of it, and there we'd be, you know, with our foot in the trap again, Max.
That's possible, but I think far more likely this civil war would have never happened in the first place, because, in fact, what's caused the civil war is Maliki's policy of persecuting Sunnis, which he waited to do until the last U.S. troops were out. Within 24 hours of that, he began victimizing prominent Sunnis. If we still had that military presence, if we were still actively involved diplomatically, which was another major failure on our part, there's a very good chance that all of this could have been avoided. And to say that we should just stay out and let the fighting burn itself out is not a realistic strategy. It's a recipe for virtual genocide of the kind that we have seen already in Syria, with more than 150,000 people dead. And it's a recipe for destabilization of other neighboring states, and it's a recipe for empowering two terrorist regimes, one Shiite, one Sunni. That is not conceivably in America's interest.
Max, stand by. I'm going to take that to Barry Posen to call first. Bill in Hartford, Connecticut. Bill, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'm calling to say that I think that President Obama is doing exactly the right thing by insisting on some kind of agreement, however it comes about, between the Sunnis and the Shiites. We could have been in there 6 weeks. The day we left, it would have turned into a hornet's nest that was turned over. We could be there 100 years, and the day we left after 100 years, it would be the same thing. I believe that Cheney was planning to do the same thing we did in 1953 in Iran. He'd take out Mossadegh, put our puppet in, and start pumping the oil. He had Chalabi all lined up to go in when Saddam Hussein came out. And that didn't work out, so here we are.
Yeah, Bill, Dick Cheney, of course, in the 90s saying, don't get involved in Iraq because it's going to fall into partition. Well, that's where we are now. He's very critical now of the president, but D.W. in Natick, Massachusetts. D.W., you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
My feeling, having spent a little bit of time in the country, is that instead of looking at the end goal of, you know, trying to maintain one single state in Iraq, that what we should be doing is acknowledging what it's been since we went in, which is a divided country with three polities. Well, the good news out of that is that two out of those three polities, you know, the Kurds in the north, the Sunnis in the west, secular Sunnis in the west, there's still a possibility of going in there and securing those areas. But supporting Maliki would be just supporting the further division of the country.
What if the third one, what if the Sunni one has got ISIS at the heart of it? What if it is a terrorist state?
But they're not at the heart of it. You see, AQI was active in the area, and as long as they have a mission and they have money and they have, you know, a goal, AQI, a.k.a. ISIS, for all the acronyms, they will have power.
Yeah, the locals will settle it down, and you might be right. One more here, and we'll take it to my guest, Brent, in Kansas City. Brent, thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. Great to have me on, Tom. I was a UAV operator, and I deployed twice to Afghanistan.
You were a drone operator over Afghanistan. Is that what that means? All right.
Yes, sir. What I want to tell you, just because these drones, some of them are armed, does not mean that we need to use the weapons on the drone. Let's send them in. Let's figure out who the players are. Let's advise the Iraqi forces there who they need to be targeting, and let's get a better picture of the battlefield. Let's get some situational awareness before we just start pulling the trigger.
So back Baghdad up from the air. It sounds pretty safe. It sounds distant from the blood. Brent, I appreciate your call. Barry Posen, all right. Max Boot says, do nothing, and you're going to have genocide, and you're going to have a destabilization of a region that is globally critical.
Well, whenever these kinds of issues arise...
One moment, Denise. I'll come to you.
Whenever these kinds of issues arise in the last 20 years, there's a certain set of arguments that are invariably trotted out. One is that the destabilization is going to spread, dominoes are going to fall, bad things are going to happen. The second is vast numbers of people are going to be killed, which is often the case, but the word genocide is often invoked.
I mean, a lot of people, civilians, died in the Iraq War.
The word genocide is invoked. And the third is there's some peculiar set of military forces that allow you to jujitsu the war on the ground, change things in favor of some invented good guys, and do not implicate the United States in any long-term commitment of military force, and that there's going to be a happy ending. Now, take, for example, Libya, right, where the chorus was paid attention to, the precision airstrikes were launched. It took vastly more time to settle the problem than anyone thought. We had to essentially engineer the death of Gaddafi, and we created an anarchy that persists to this day.
I see where you're going.
So that's point one. Now, point two is this whole story of the surge and the success of the surge. This is a very fraught issue. But one thing I think is fair, and I think black letter evidence supports it, right? The surge, as Max says, the casualties went down.
Yes.
The question is, what is A, how that happened, and B, what else was supposed to happen that didn't happen? Now, if you go back to the original discussion of the surge, the military stability that was created was meant to open the space for political reform. Now, you can go
and
read.
And that didn't happen.
You can,
the Shia took over.
It's more important than that. You can go read the quarterly reports that the Pentagon was required to produce on security and stability in Iraq.
Yeah.
And after the surge happened, I think almost every report up to the last one issued essentially says
– not happening.
Not happening, isn't happening. And because it's not happening, right, there's going to be real problems here. Almost every single one. So while we were there with our arms around him, creating all this stability, these essential decisions –
couldn't make it happen.
And by the way, I would say it's a mistake to just blame Maliki. Maliki is responding to the political desires of his constituents.
Let me ask you about this because our time grows short. You could picture – you're talking about Libya, still not settled, still kind of a mess, could be chaotic there. Look at Afghanistan. Who's to say the Taliban won't take over there when we're out at the end of the year? I mean, are we going to be sitting here a year from now with the Taliban in charge in Afghanistan, Mesopotamia in a mess, North Africa in a mess? At what point is this disarray not okay? At what point does it add up to a strategic unacceptability?
Well, it doesn't – I mean, to say that it's strategically unacceptable, even if I were to to sort of say that it's strategically unacceptable, even if I were to say it was there's a vital interest that's engaged here, I would still need a credible theory, a strategy for how to move vast numbers of socially mobilized people right, in the direction of a form of government that they've not been able to make work in the past, and to do so with a generous admixture of American advice and military power and everything else. Now, that means that particular strategy for addressing this problem, even if I accepted the problem as you stated, that strategy has been proven to be costly and ineffective. So it's incumbent upon those who are desperate to do something to come up with another solution. Now, I have another solution, and the solution is quarantine, contain, observe, divide. That's my solution. I think it's Ms. Natale's solution as well, if I understand her correctly.
I'll go to her. Denise, do you see a way to not repeat the very costly and ultimately ineffective exercises of the past and yet protect, defend U.S. interests here?
We have to be careful about making this comparison, and I agree with Barry that, you know, what we saw in the Iraq One invasion, Afghanistan, we failed. But this is not the same situation as 2003. We are not talking about regime change. This is, if this is to be...
Yes,
you know,
we are. People are talking very specifically about getting Maliki and his people out.
I don't agree. This would be a disaster, too. Nobody likes Maliki.
Everybody's saying that's a precondition for American engagement right now.
And I'm saying if we go along that route, if we didn't learn any lesson from Iraq by going in and getting into regime change externally, we will have a backlash.
So you leave Maliki in and he's just championing Shiite interests and you've got civil war, religious war.
First of all, he got 750,000 votes. Let them pull him out. Okay, let us cut a deal. Let the Iraqis take him out. Secondly, let's remember, too, Iraq is a mess, but you've got a booming South And you've got 3.5 million barrels of oil produced in the south, and the Kurdish north stable. So you actually are talking about a very unstable Sunni Arab population that has been disfranchised until the Hawija crisis. When I was in Iraq there last year, Maliki actually had the Sunni Arab tribes on his side. So he screwed up. But we have to be very careful and fine-tune what worked and what didn't before saying nothing will work. Okay, so Maliki pretty much agreed has to go. For us to go in, the United States, and say you're out, I think that would be as much trouble at this point as going in and start bombing.
Nothing that's clearly going to make him go away. Last call, Brian Buford, South Carolina. Brian, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have 2 points. I mean, one, we keep going back over there year after year after year because we have to secure the oil. Let's work on our energy policy so we don't have to care. And then two, I'd like to read you two Bible verses, Genesis 16:11-12. This is important reading.
You are not pregnant and will give birth to a son. His name shall be Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your misery. And he will be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone.
Brian, we've got it. We only have time to go so deep back into Genesis, but I appreciate your perspective on energy. Max Boot, fix our energy policy. Don't go back in, or do we have to really, Max, and you really think it'll be different this time?
We should certainly become energy self-sufficient, but that's not going to change the fact that this is a major center of oil in the world, which matters to the global economy, and it matters if it's in the hands of Al-Qaeda or Iran or other terrorist groups. Again, this notion that everything in Iraq was this unmitigated disaster is just flat-out wrong. In fact, things did turn around there. It did achieve pretty good stability by 2011. So much.
But here we sit, and there's
Vice President Biden was bragging. Vice President Biden himself was bragging. This would be one of the signature achievements of the Obama administration. It's come undone because we have completely left Iraq on its own. That was a major mistake. I mean, what Barry Posen is arguing for is essentially what used to be called isolationism. In a milder form, it's non-interventionism. That's essentially the direction in which President Obama has been going. He's been pulling back from the Middle East. He's been pulling back from other parts of
the world.
Maybe
it's strategic now to go that way. Isolate, divide, monitor.
You know, we have been pulling back for the last several years. That's why more than 150,000 people have died in Syria. That's why Al-Qaeda has revived in Iraq and taken control of about a third of the country. These are disasters that are going on as a result of American non-interventionism. Now, I'm willing to admit there were disasters because of American interventionism, but on the whole, I think there is just simply no way we can stand aloof and let one country after another fall to terrorists. We've already let Syria go that way. Now we're letting Iraq go that way. What's next?
Max, we've got it. I think all the visions are on the table. The president speaking just after noon today to the nation. By the time you hear that, we may have that behind our ear as well. Max Boot, author of The Savage Wars of Peace, joining us from New York. Thank you very much for being with us. Denise Natali at the Institute for National Strategic Studies at the National Defense University. Thank you for joining us. Barry Posen at MIT, author of Restraint. Barry, thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
Listeners, thanks for all your input. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.